Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. This is the California Report Podcast. I'm Penny Nelson.
And I'm Tiffany Kamhi. And the winter storm that's been dumping rain and snow throughout the state is flooding roadways, causing power outages, and forcing communities near swollen rivers to evacuate. And it's also triggered mudslide warnings in areas scorched by last year's wildfires. It's an especially nerve-wracking time for people living near the burn areas of the Holy Fire, which scorched more than 23,000 acres in Riverside and Orange counties back in August of 2018. From KVCR in San Bernardino, Danielle Fox has more.
Suzanne Bell says having no debris basins in her neighborhood has been a nightmare. The concrete bowls at the bottom of canyons catch rocks and muck during heavy rains.
I'm trying to sell this house, and nobody's touching it.
She put her house in Lake Elsinore, south of Riverside, up for sale right before the fire. Since then, she spent tens of thousands of dollars repairing her yard from a mudslide that hit in December. Insurance would only cover about a fourth of the cost, and every time it rains, she has to clear a creek in her yard of debris. Bell's home is in Robin Hood Oaks. The hills are too steep for even debris nets. Trucks couldn't make it up to unload them.
That particular community is probably the single toughest one of all the thousands of homes that are at risk at the base of the Cleveland National Forest.
That's Riverside County Supervisor Kevin Jeffries. He says beyond helping out with evacuations, there's not much the county can do. The creek that runs through the neighborhood and Bell's yard, it's private property, so the county isn't responsible for dredging it or covering any damage costs. This means when there's a big storm, Bell and her neighbors have to clean up all the debris themselves.
We live differently. We live real cheaply because I have to pay for things like backhoes and tractors with the scoopers on them.
The county's agreed to collect the debris from the streets if residents put it by their curbs, but the rest is on them. The evacuations and storms have also taken a toll on county resources.
Some of these basins hadn't had to been cleared for a decade. And now we're doing it weekly.
That's Jason Yulee. He's the general manager at Riverside County Flood Control.
We're talking about moving thousands of truckloads of material that gets trapped behind our dams and sometimes in our channels. And so we've incurred a cost of probably over $5.5 million to date.
Yulee says the Office of Emergency Management has expanded the size of the debris basins over the past several months so they can capture more material in case of a bigger storm. But he says for neighborhoods that don't have these basins, the only thing people can really do is evacuate. For the California Report, I'm Danielle Fox in San Bernardino.
So, Tiffany, did you have a hard time driving in today?
Yes, I did. The roads were really wet, but what was worse was the wind. I have to drive over the Golden Gate Bridge to get to KQED, and it was very, very windy. I actually slowed down to 60 miles per hour. Usually I go 80 miles per hour.
Wow.
Don't tell CHP.
Well, I know that the campfire survivors have been kind of tense in the last week or so because they knew that the FEMA funds that have been allowing them to stay in hotels and motels, those funds were supposed to be drying up and as of today. But now word is out that that is going to be extended, and they have a bit of a reprieve. FEMA is going to extend the program funding their stays in motels and hotels until May 10th. And Polly Stryker brings us that story now.
FEMA spokesman Ken Higginbotham says around 616 households that survived November's campfire were living in hotels and motels using the agency's Transitional Sheltering Assistance, or TSA, program. Higginbotham said a household could be one person or eight or nine. He didn't have a total number of people using the program. He said it has been extended to May 10th because the need is there.
We know this is a real, real traumatic experience for these disaster survivors, but the system is set up for them to have a roof over their heads and be able to move forward and look for other places to stay.
FEMA reviews people's eligibility to stay in hotels and motels every 2 weeks. Higginbotham says campfire survivors have to prove they're looking for more permanent housing to remain eligible. He says the agency is doing everything it can to help people get back on the road to recovery. For the California Report, I'm Polly Stryker.
So, Penny, did you catch Governor Gavin Newsom's State of the State this week?
Oh, yeah, his first one. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, he talked about a lot of things. What is it, the bullet train?
Yeah, and he's very interested in the Central Valley. And that's where he was yesterday doing his first piece of legislation.
Right. And as KVPR's Carrie Klein reports, he chose to sign them at a Central Valley school where the water contains a carcinogen and kids can't even use the drinking fountains.
Newsom introduced the bills to a room full of students at Riverview Elementary School in the Fresno County city of Parlier.
Shall we sign?
Yes.
Yes? Okay.
The legislation pulls $131 million out of the general fund for several projects, including emergency preparedness, bottled water, and other ways to help communities with unsafe drinking water. In the longer term, Newsom also committed to the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund, a pot of money for water projects that had failed to get to former Governor Jerry Brown's desk. Newsom, however, allocated almost $5 million to the fund in the preliminary budget he introduced last month.
I cannot sleep well. I know that's a rote cliche thing, but honestly, I don't deserve to be your governor if I can't figure out a way to get that done.
Appearing alongside State Senator Melissa Hurtado, who represents Parlier, Newsom also defended his decision to scale back plans for the high-speed rail and reiterated his commitment to serving the Central Valley. For the California Report, I'm Carrie Klein in Parlier.
So, Tiffany, I think this next story is really interesting. The U.S. has a delegation right now in China that's doing a whole series of conversations around
trade talks.
Trade talks.
Yes,
yeah.
I've heard of this.
And the tariffs. And as a result, businesses have got a whole bunch of orders in. And that has meant the ports in the U.S. are seeing a surge of goods come in before the tariffs kick in, which is supposed to start happening the first week of March.
What ports are we talking about?
Well, California has the largest port in the U.S., and that's the L.A. Long Beach Complex. So this next story is a conversation with the executive director of that port, Mario Cordero. I asked him, what are you seeing at the Long Beach L.A. Complex with this big surge of goods?
Well, number one, for the Port of Long Beach, for calendar year 2018, we had our best year of container movement in 108 years. As a port, we moved 8.1 million containers, which superseded 2017. And at that time, 2017 was the best year. So for us, what we're experiencing is growth. And given the fact that, that we have a good economy, a good global economy, and of course, all that based on consumer demand. Now, having said all that, there is concern with regard to the prolonged aspect of these trade discussions between the United States and China.
Are you associating this beefed up volume to the tariff talks?
Well, I think it's fair to say there's a percentage of our growth that may have been due to expedited cargo, that is cargo that has come in anticipation of an application of a tariff. So thus the American shipper has expedited this cargo to the port. But on the other hand, our forecast, if you go back a couple years, was way before the trade discussions that have evolved as we now see it. Our forecast was growth.
So what kinds of goods are you seeing the biggest increase in? And are there specific goods or categories of goods that are in particular really coming in a higher volume than you would expect?
Well, in all aspects. I mean, you're talking about, you know, electronics, furniture, textile, footwear, goods that, again, come from primarily Asia. You know, the Port of Long Beach, 70% of our imports come from China. The tune of 40% of exports from our port go to China. At the end of the day, the port is the closest proximity to the most important trade route for the United States, which is the Trans-Pacific trade route with Asia as a whole.
That was Mario Cordero. He's the executive director of the Port of Long Beach. And finally, today is Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day, Penny.
Hug it out.
While you're hugging it out, we'd like to send some love to the amazing little rover that could. Have you heard of Opportunity, Penny?
Oh, yeah.
So Opportunity was this little rover that was only supposed to be running for 90 days, but it ran for 15 years.
It's so cool.
On Mars.
So cool.
So it was exploring Mars for 15 years, But as our KQED science editor, Danielle Venton, tells us, opportunity has reached the end of the road.
Every love must come to an end.
Opportunity was NASA's geologist on Mars. It found evidence the planet once hosted liquid water and had active hydrothermal vents. It, along with its twin rover, Spirit, rewrote both our understanding of planets beyond Earth and how to explore them. Spirit gave out in 2011, while Opportunity continued to visit crater after crater, sending home stunning photos and data.
We'll never forget the amazing work that happened here. It transformed our understanding of our planet.
NASA's Thomas Zurbuchen announced the end of Opportunity's mission from its command center at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena Wednesday.
Everything we do and think about in our planetary neighborhood with Mars and elsewhere relates to the research that came from that.
Opportunity was only meant to work for 3 months back in 2004, but engineers found novel ways to extend its life for a decade and a half. The rover's end began last June when a fierce dust storm, the most intense ever seen on Mars, blocked out the sunlight the rover needed to charge its solar panels. NASA made more than 800 attempts to get in touch with the rover, but eventually they just had to stop calling. For the California Report, I'm Danielle Venton.
Penny, can you believe 800 messages, not hearing anything back?
Well, it is sort of a tragic end to that love affair, isn't it?
When my heart is broken.
Well, Tiffany, you know, Nina Simone says you got to get up from the table when love's no longer being served. I think Rover made it clear.
All right, we'll take it from Nina Simone.
Nina Simone, she says it best.
And that's the California Report podcast for Thursday, February 14th,
yep.
Valentine's Day. It's a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Tiffany Kamhi.
And I'm Penny Nelson.
Liz Taylor is not a star. And even Lana Turner smile. Something he can't see.
Support for the California Report comes from Personal Capital, offering wealth management and online financial tools to help customers manage their money with transparency and control. More information at personalcapital.com. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.